Hello and welcome to the Local Economic Development Podcast.
Hosted by Sean Cunningham
and Jörg Meyer-Starman.
For other programs in this series, please take a look at www.ledcast.net. Welcome to today's episode. In today's episode, we will discuss a workshop format known as the Compass of Competitiveness. Jörg, can you maybe explain where this whole idea of the Compass workshop originates from?
Sure. It is a format that we have come up with a few years ago. The context was that we had been doing LED activities on the ground in quite a few localities. And then people asked, okay, so afterwards, after people have been implementing a couple of things, what is a useful next step? Also, how can we monitor these activities? Also, how can we strategize? How can we plan further activities? And that is pretty much the context in which we came up with the Compass.
So, Jörg, what is the background in terms of theoretical underpinnings? Where is it coming from?
It's basically a combination of two major elements. The one element is these visualization techniques that we use most of the time in our workshops. So facilitation technique, what is called the moderation method using cards. So it's very participatory. It's based on that school of thought. And from a more conceptual angle, the background is the balanced scorecard.
Right. But isn't the balanced scorecard something that you typically find in the private sector?
That's exactly where it started. It first came out actually in the early 1990s. It was the brainchild of a couple of management thinkers, and it was then introduced into companies, especially in large corporations. Subsequently, it was also introduced in some major government organizations. And then in the late 1990s, it was picked up by some people involved in local or regional economic development. The first time I came across it was actually in the context of cluster initiatives. So some development agencies in Europe are using the balanced scorecard to do performance management in their cluster initiatives.
So Jörg, if we wanted to very briefly explain to people what happens in a Compass workshop, what are the main steps that we should maybe highlight?
Well, the first thing that we need to say is, it is a workshop. It is a longer workshop than the mini workshops that we often advocate. So a Compass workshop would take something like half a day or even a little bit more than that. And there's a series of steps, a series of movements that we go through. But essentially, we can pin it down to five major activities. And those five activities would be to define what exactly we're talking about, to have a look back, what have we achieved in and around this activity so far, then look at the overarching objective, then look at critical success factors, and finally define new or additional activities.
Okay, so that is basically a very abstract perspective. Maybe we should drill in, just for the benefit of our listeners who's never heard about the Compass workshop, into a little bit more detail. You've outlined five stages there. Should we start maybe with the first one and just briefly say what is the main purpose and what should one try to achieve there?
Right. So the first really important thing that we need to do in a Compass workshop is to define what exactly we are going to talk about. Now, obviously, before we convene a Compass workshop, we have kind of an idea of what we want to talk about. So imagine that you have under your LED, say, a tourism initiative. So there's a couple of people involved who all come from the tourism sector, some private sector people, a few public sector people. They have been doing a couple of things to promote local economic development around tourism already. And now you want to strategize further and look at additional activities and find out what really crucial activities might look like. So that is kind of what you agree on the outset. And you have now invited these people. They are there in the room with you, starting for the workshop to pick up speed. And the challenge then is to ask, okay, so what precisely do we want to look at? And what I found is a very practical way of doing that is to ask, well, who's in, who's out? Who's the insiders, who's the outsiders? Who is the core group that is driving these things, which is us, and who is them? Well, the other people that we need to relate to in one way or another, who might be customers, who might be external agencies, who might be other stakeholders, who are maybe competing with us for attention and for resources.
And then we look back. And the importance of that is that we very often, when we're involved in LED, I mean, we're not the first. So there's always been activities in the past, even if it wasn't called LED or whatever the initiative is about. And with looking back, we try to look at what have we done so far? What have we achieved so far? What's our outcomes of outcomes been, and what's our impact of our activities? And if it is possible to identify sources of data and so forth. So in that step, we really put a lot of people at rest because they are really worried that this is another new activity that's ignoring everything else that happened.
Let me maybe just add to what you just said. I think there's different situations where people have been using the compass. One of the things I like to recommend is to use the compass, say, half a year or 1 year after you've kicked off LED activities in a specific sector or in a locality. So imagine that a year ago you had, say, a PACA exercise, a couple of practical activities came out of that, and now the question is, who has actually done what have we achieved, and what should we do now? And this is now the perfect situation to do the compass. And when we look back, we would say, okay, so what happened since the PACA exercise? We have this 1 year period. There were a couple of activities that were agreed upon at the end of the PACA exercise. We all know that some of them were implemented and some of them not. But maybe there's also other things that happened. Maybe some people pursued other activities and were so busy and so excited that they never found the time to actually talk about that much. And many people, many other stakeholders are not quite informed about those other things that have happened in the meantime. So this, at this stage, at this moment, there's a great opportunity just to bring everybody to the same level of knowing what has been going on since we started with this sector initiative.
But other people use this to start processes. Some of our colleagues we know use this right at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's something that is an option, and I think it's particularly a useful option when you come to a location where people have been doing some kind of LED or something like LED for quite some time. When I come into a locality and local stakeholders don't really know what LED is all about and don't really have a practical idea of what it might involve, then I would actually hesitate to use the compass. I think we have better tools to use at the very beginning of an LED process.
Right. So once we've looked back at the previous activities that's taken place and that's completed or maybe still going on, what do we do next?
Well, the next step then is to discuss, well, why are we doing whatever we are doing here right now? Why are we doing this? What is the ultimate objective that we want to achieve? So again, imagine that you're doing this with a couple of people who are involved in tourism in a given locality. So they might say, well, the overarching objective is to raise the income of all the stakeholders in our locality. Okay, why not? Or they could say, well, the overarching goal is we really want to position ourselves as the leading tourism destination in our province or even in our country or even in the world. Well, why not? Stretch goals are not necessarily bad. So that is what the third step is about, to think about why are we doing this? What are we trying to achieve with that?
Okay. So once we've figured out what the primary objective is, the main overarching objective is, and what the smaller objectives are that's supporting that, we go to the point of identifying critical success factors. So maybe we should just, to clarify this, explain that a critical success factor, the critical means really important. So we don't use critical in the negative as in the things that must go wrong or could go wrong. We use this to say, well, a critical success factor would be something that we really have to get right. So in tourism, what would an example be of a critical success factor?
A typical critical success factor that I've often seen coming up in real workshops was, we need to upgrade the skills of staff involved in local tourism activities. We need more better qualified waiters in restaurants. We need better qualified reception staff in hotels. We need taxi drivers who don't cheat on people all the time and actually speak more than one language, and so on. So skills would be a typical issue. then marketing the place, highlighting, advertising the locality, and explaining what kind of attractions it has to offer is a very important success factor. Actually, having activities, having interesting, exciting activities would be a typical critical success factor. And then all the things that have to do with the way the different stakeholders interact, the way in which they work together, work jointly on issues. So local networking, local governance, that would also be a typical critical success factor.
So I know one of the questions that you like to use here that works really well is, what are the factors that determine the success of our initiative? Or what are the factors that decide the success of our effort to build a competitive place or sector or theme or whatever? And which elements need to be in place so that we can build a competitive location or a competitive sector or a competitive tourism activity? So basically to make sure that we don't just get simple little tasks that must be done, but that we get a whole variety of different kind of activities that would make or break our effort.
Yeah. Actually, it's quite important to explain to participants that at that stage we are not looking for proposals, but we are looking for things that need to be there.
Okay, so now we've identified these critical success factors. And what do we do with them next?
Well, we organize them into the four quadrants. And that is where this balanced scorecard framework comes in. Maybe I should just quickly explain what the background of the balanced scorecard was. The balanced scorecard came about because management thinkers were concerned that companies were taking an effort to optimize their short-term achievements, their short-term gains, their short-term profits, to the detriment of longer-term sustainability of the business and a longer-term effort to build a competitive advantage. And that was because many companies had metrics, had indicators that primarily looked at financial results, often quarterly financial results. So management thinkers said, well, if you have this kind of indicator, if you use this kind of indicator, there is a risk that people will cut the longer-term investment, the investment into activities such as skills development or research and development, that doesn't really bring that much benefit in the short term, but is really, really important in the longer term. So to overcome this bias, this narrow perspective, they said, well, let's look at four types of factors, and that is the four quadrants of the balanced scorecard. So obviously we have to look at financial indicators, at financial factors. But we also want to look at customer relationships. We want to look at the ways in which we delight our customers. Then we also want to look at factors that have to do with our internal processes, the way we organize our organization. And we need to look at what they called knowledge and growth. And that was growth as in personal growth, as in growth through personal learning and widening your personal the personal horizons of the people in that organization. So those were the original four quadrants of the balanced scorecard.
So the way we modified the four quadrants just so that it fits better with an LED setting is, firstly, the first quadrant we renamed economic and financial factors. So I think that makes sense. It explains it. The second one, we look at external relationships. And this is where we look at relationships with some non-LED stakeholders or some external stakeholders. Say in the example of tourism, foreign tour operators, or maybe some other UN agency because we want our place to be a heritage site, or maybe even customers that are very far away. And then the third quadrant is internal process and organization. So it basically explains how we will interact and the means and the methods. And by this quadrant, we don't mean what the committee would look like. It basically means how will existing actors share information, connect with each other. And then the fourth one we've renamed to knowledge and learning, because in the development field, we also want these actors to learn about how to interact with each other and to make sure that they constantly reflect on their progress and the impact.
Mm. And we would also say, well, for instance, in tourism, you want to do customer surveys and similar things. You want to do researching. You want to do benchmarking. So knowledge and learning is not only about the skills of your staff, but it's also on the way that you analyze your position in the market.
Yes, and the way we keep track with whether our whole effort is working. Okay, so now we take our critical success factors and we have to allocate them to these four quadrants.
Yeah, and that is sometimes an extremely entertaining experience.
So let me guess. I mean, most of the cards would show up on one and on three, on this process by committee kind of a thing. So a lot of, I mean, typically that's where we find a lot of cards.
Yeah, it may turn out like that. What I also very often find is that actually the vast majority of cards end up under knowledge and learning and internal process. So people are extremely inward looking, are extremely concerned with what they can do locally amongst themselves, how they can coordinate activities amongst themselves. And they completely forget about those factors where they look at the market and at external agencies and also the economic and financial factors. And in any case, one of the typical observations is that once we have organized the cards with the critical success factors into those four quadrants, we find that, well, it's not a balanced scorecard. It's rather a very unbalanced scorecard.
Right. So obviously what we would have to do is look at the quadrants that are very empty and then identify some additional critical success factors there. And it's important to maybe just note at this point that if somebody wrote on a card diversification or growth or shared income or equal income, that is not a critical success factor. It's just a word that doesn't actually explain, you know, it's too unspecific.
Yeah, right. As a matter of fact, I think it's important to highlight that whereas in some other workshops, we are sometimes a little bit lenient and don't force people to be very focused and very concise. In a Compass workshop, it's absolutely mandatory to be really concise. So we find ourselves very often in a position where we hand cards back to people and ask them to be much more specific, much more focused, and explain much better what exactly they want to say.
And it's also justified because we are typically working with the community leaders and the leaders of business. So it is a workshop that is a little bit more strategic in nature. Right, Jörg. So now we've got these four quadrants full of critical success factors. And we have to, I would guess, prioritize. What is the ideal number of critical success factors per quadrant?
Well, we typically would end in after this brainstorming with somewhere between, well, in my experience, between 5 and 15 factors per quadrant. And then we would apply the usual Pareto rule, the usual voting rule. Every participant would get some dots and vote on the most critical success factors. And we typically would come out with, well, say maybe 2 critical success factors per quadrant, sometimes in some cases 3 critical success factors in some quadrants. So maybe a total of, say, 10 critical success factors that come out as the really important critical success factors.
Okay. In this discussion, we're going through this very fast. But the last very important step before we identify activities would be to match the new critical success factors and what we've identified with the list of activities that we identified early on when we looked back at the past.
I think what we should explain is that this is one of the points where we really have modified things, and that has come out of learning. I mean, we have been experimenting with this tool for a few years now, and people who know the balanced scorecard method would say, "Well, don't you now have to look at key performance indicators?" And that is what we tried initially. So in the first workshops we did, around where we experimented with the compass, we said, okay, now we look at key performance indicators. What we very quickly found was that many local stakeholders don't really have a knack for indicators, are not necessarily that interested in indicators, also have very little experience in the formulation of indicators. So we then at one point said, okay, this doesn't work very well inside this workshop as part of this workshop. Let's rather, if we want to formulate indicators, and we probably want to, let's rather kind of outsource it. Let's have a separate meeting where just a few people who know how to formulate indicators meet and have a brainstorming around the relevant indicators. So that we don't do and we don't spend much time and much effort on this anymore inside the Compass workshop.
And I think there's another thing that we should mention, and that is that at this point, this workshop's been running for some time as well. So we don't want to go into an argument now about whether something is definitely an indicator, whether it's an objective or whether it's an outcome or what. So now we have a list of critical success factors that are spread across the four quadrants. So I guess what we have to do next would be to take a look at the activities that we identified right at the beginning of the workshop, the past activities and the ongoing activities, and then we have to match them up with the critical success factors. Jörg, how would we do this?
Yeah, well, I've been experimenting with different ways of doing that, and the way I like best is like this. As you said, you would ask, okay, so what are the things that are going on just now? And also, what are other activities that are kind of in the pipeline? So a couple of people said, we need to do this, we want to do that. A couple of activities are championed by some local stakeholders. And we would then write them up, put them onto cards, and we would create a matrix. And on the one axis of the matrix, we would highlight the top critical success factors. So they say the 10 that came out with the highest vote earlier. And then on the other axis, we put up these activities that are ongoing or are imminent. And then we ask the stakeholders, okay, so which activity will contribute to which critical success factor?
So what we'll have is a couple of critical success factors that are maybe supported by many of the activities that's on that matrix. But we might also find that there's some critical success factors that have no activity supporting them.
Or very few, yeah. Or only indirect.
And, I mean, then it's logical that the next step would be to identify the gaps.
Quite right, yeah. So then the point is to say, okay, which of the critical success factors are not very much being addressed right now? And then if people are still sufficiently energized, I mean, at this stage, we would have been workshopping for 4 or 5 hours. And even allowing for tea breaks and maybe some energizers in between, our participants are going to be very tired. So maybe we are not going to have a very lively discussion now, but it's still worth to have a first brainstorming on possible activities.
Okay, and I mean the brainstorming on the activities would follow our usual format where we determine what is the activity and we ask the 6 questions.
So the first one is how exactly are we going to do this, which also means unpacking the activities. The second one would ask who is going to take responsibility, who is going to take charge. The third one, who has to collaborate. The fourth question is are there any specific resources that we need to mobilize to do this. The fifth question is when do we start, and the last and slightly awkward question is how do we know that we started. But that is a very important question, especially if some degree of volunteership is involved. And we want to have some mechanism where we get the feedback whether people who promised to do something actually started doing that.
Right. Now, Jörg, this sounds like a very complicated process that we've just outlined. Our listeners would now be wondering where they can find out more about this method.
As a matter of fact, it sounds much more complex than it is. I found that it's a very straightforward workshop. I think the first point we should mention is that this is a workshop format, the development of which has to a large extent been sponsored by GTZ. So we started with that, but then it was very quickly adopted by many GTZ projects, and they kindly put this into the public domain. So the documentation is freely available. And also what I have found is that training facilitators, training people who have a background in facilitation and who know something about LED to do the compass, to run the compass in a very competent way, is something that I can easily do in 2 days. So over the past 3 years, I've done a couple of compass trainings, and typically it was 2 days where we went through the various steps once and I explained all the do's and don'ts, and then we had a second round, went through it again, and the participants did it themselves, and after that they were usually sufficiently confident to go out and actually apply the method.
Right, so if people want to know more about training events, or if they want to within their region maybe participate in a training event, then they need to send us an email to contact@ledcast.net. and then we can take it from there.
Right. And we should point out that it's not only you and me who know how to do this. There is actually a community of practice. There's quite a few people who know how to apply this, who can do it, and there's also some of them who would be more than happy to run a training workshop on the Compass. So people who want to do this have actually quite a few options.
Great. So I think this has been a very long show. And maybe just to highlight that we will do another show, a follow-up show on this, where we would go into more detail on how to exactly run this and the typical things that one should look out for.
And all the lessons that we've learned over the past 3 years.
Right, Jörg. Well, let's wrap it up. And I would like to invite our listeners to get in touch with us and to maybe let us know how they use our LED cast shows and whether they've shared these with friends and colleagues, and whether they have any special requests on how we can adapt and improve these shows, because we've reached a point where we've been running for a year now. I think we published our first show about 11 months ago. So if people have any ideas on how we can improve the show and make it better, then please let us know. And you can also reach us at contact@ledcast.net.
Great. Nice talking to you.
Okay. Until next time.